Hello and welcome to Twin Peaks. This is Peter Higgins at Conkers 3. I'm here with my good friend Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. We're heading into part two of the first podcast of 2020. We've already chatted about the markets and other bits and pieces that we've seen regarding certain stocks. We're going to talk a bit more now about the markets and some of the things that Pete's seen and he's got some concerns about. So, hello, Pete. Welcome back.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm very well, mate. You wanted to talk
You're
about
no
something?
different to what you were 10 minutes ago, is what you're
No,
saying.
but you know what I mean. We like to introduce people and and just say hello and do the same again. So
Absolutely.
we've already said to folks, please subscribe, please subscribe, please subscribe. So if you can, across all the accounts that you can find us on, please subscribe to the podcast. That'd be excellent. Thank you for your continued support.
I was just thinking, just to throw in quickly, we're recording this on the evening of Wednesday, the 15th of January.
Yeah, it's presently 19 hours and 17 minutes. So that's 17 minutes past 7
UK
p.m.
time,
UK time.
GMT.
So, as I mentioned in part one, those listening in Finland, hello. Those
Hello,
listening,
Finland, yet again.
yeah, those listening in Stoke-on-Trent, hello.
Hello, Stoke-on-Trent.
Yeah, so thank you guys. We've got people listening in Australia, New Zealand, America, obviously UK. So thank you all for listening from wherever you are. And if you find us on Twitter, just give us a little hello and tell us where you are. And if you want to leave a comment below as to where you're listening from, that'd be really, really helpful as well. Thank you guys and ladies. So Pete, where you at?
Well, yeah, we were talking before about what sort of things we should discuss in the podcast. One thing that's been sort of playing on my mind, and I've had this thought for, a few weeks now, it's been sort of germinating, and I've been sort of thinking it through and whatever. And I'm not saying this is going to happen, right? It's not like a definite or anything like that. But I just get this hunch, this sneaky feeling that we might see a repeat of the 1990s throughout the 2020s or whatever, yeah? Where basically stock markets through the 1990s pretty much just tended to rise all through the 1990s. And as we came to the tail end, I guess it was like 98, 99 into 2000, it all just went bonkers. And we had this dot-com bubble, the dot-com boom, it all went insane. And it all went pop, yeah. And I just, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I just think it's an outside possibility, but it's something we must think about and think about the implications for us of it, because I think it really could happen. Is that a maddest thing you've heard today, or what?
That is, I wasn't expecting you to tell me this, but
Ah,
or to raise it.
I thought I'd drop it on you.
I suppose I'm not saying I'm in agreement with you, Pete. I suppose one of my concerns is, and has been for a little while, is that although we had lots of flux during 2019, the markets actually did quite well despite it, and the
Incredible.
markets in general, US especially, has been climbing a wall of worry, as they call it. For years and years now. So, we're now what, 12 years in from the 2007, 2008 sort of slumps. We've had little mini slumps in between. So the markets are all at, well, not all, because the FTSE isn't, we're heading towards record highs. And there's lots of talk now of, it's been inevitable that the FTSE 100 is going to hit the 8,000 sort of mark. But lots of people did extremely well on the markets last year. For a variety of reasons, great selection of stocks, great research, or luck, in the case of some of the stocks that I had.
I think it's probably
Now,
a lot of luck is involved for everybody.
absolutely,
the tailwinds were with us last year. There's no doubt
absolutely,
about
and even some of the individuals that I know that I gave a shout out to before that had significant number of profit warnings still managed to do 20 odd percent, across the year.
Yeah.
So, and we know that there's some individuals out there that didn't make any money, and for those we feel for them, and we hope that they'll take away and reflect and absolutely do even better than they did in 2019, because not everybody made hay in 2019. But for those.
Well, I mean, I did myself, because I hedged in a big way, because I was very, very nervous about things, and that really hit me. Having said that, I still made an absolute pile of money, But I could have made out of a lot bigger pile of money.
So on that hedging bit, Pete, so this is a bit that people don't understand. You were doing it on and off throughout the year, yeah? It did impact you. How much did it impact you so people get a sort of understanding as to
Well,
when this goes wrong, which in the case that you're admitting that it did go wrong,
yeah.
what you're talking about now in a sense of when it went awry?
Well, I would say, I mean, funnily enough, I'm actually just finished the first draft of a blog I produce around this time every year. And
Okay.
it's called Scores on the Doors 2020. And it should come out probably within the next couple of days. And you'll be able to, people will be able to find it on my website, www.wheeliedealer.weebly.com.
Yeah.
Or is it .co.uk? I don't even know what my own website is. You know what I mean? Hey, mate, we're talking to the pros here. You know what I mean? Anyway, yeah. So, I mean, in terms, I mean, on the return on capital employed, yeah, and bear in mind I use leverage as well. I think my return on capital employed last year was 9%, which, when you consider that I don't really think I took on much risk last year, and when you bear in mind I was so inactive, I did nothing. I did so few trades last year. On my stocks and stuff, I was hardly buying anything. I think in terms of like exposure, you could probably say that it hit me to the tune of, say, just as a guess, probably 12%, some of that. So it hurt me a lot.
Wow. Okay.
And the problem is, and I've written about this on my website, and there'll be a link within the Scores and Doors blog that people can click the link, and it'll take them through to the explanation. I mean, really, what I did was I hedged in a very inactive sense. And I think in the future, I'm moving to a model where when I hedge, I call it smart hedging, but really it's what you would call dynamic hedging. So basically, it's using stop losses and being really strict with them. So whatever I think is happening, with the political chaos and whatever, if the market goes up and it triggers my stop loss, I've got to get out. And it's as simple as that. And if I'd have obeyed stop losses, I would have made a fortune last year. And I would have taken a very small hit on the hedges. But as it happened, I let the hedges run and it was very difficult to get out of them. But,
Right.
you live and learn. You live and learn.
But this is the beauty of, we've all been in the game long, Pete, and this is it. We're all making, well, some of us are still making mistakes. I'm making mistakes.
Oh,
Pete's
mate.
making mistakes.
I make them all
We saw what happened with the multi-billion pounds that Woodford had last year. Series of mistakes that are still impacting people now. So everyone's learning, and anyone out there that's not making any mistakes or claiming not to make any mistakes, and then are never around when the shares tank. Just be careful of what you're listening to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I heard something today on a completely unrelated thing. I was driving home in the car after getting my new phone.
Sorry, which car were you in, Pete?
Well, I was in the Cupra. I was in the Cupra.
Oh, you're still using that one, are you? Okay.
The new one won't be here for a couple of months, unfortunately. But I was coming home, and they were talking about, silly proverbs or something on the Steve Wright show or whatever it was, and it said, "It's better to make a mistake and be humble than to make an accomplishment and be arrogant."
Oh yeah,
That
that is very
in it.
good.
I thought, oh, that's good, that. And it wasn't in the context of shares or anything. I was just listening to Steve Wright's show, but it really, I thought, God, that's so good. That's bang on the money, that is.
I think this is an important thing. We've got some really good individuals within the Twitterati FinTwit community that we all speak with and share with.
Yeah.
But I think what happens sometimes is when people do well, sometimes they don't get the same sort of recognition for doing well. However, when you don't do so well, everyone there's a real empathy there. People come out and embrace and talk about it. I'm not sure what the success thing is. So I just think at all times you should carry yourself with dignity and humility and look out for people. So if someone's doing well, you should say congratulations. If someone's doing badly, you should try and help them out or
Yeah.
be there for them and be supportive.
And I think there's interesting. I mean, I very I mean I always joke about the market gods, right? And it I'm not religious or anything like that, but I do believe in the market gods, and I believe in market karma. And I really have this sense that, you know, if you start making a load of money on the things and you start getting arrogant, you start getting cocky, you start going up your own backside, you know, sooner or later the market is going to kick you so hard in the ghoulies, or if you're a lady, it's going to smack you in the whatever. It's going to do that, you know, because that's what it does. That is what it does. It has an incredible ability to humiliate you. So, you know, I've got an example, right? There's somebody I know on Twitter. She's a lovely lady, really, really nice, really friendly, whatever. And she's quite new to the game, yeah? And someone called her an idiot the other day, or whatever it was, on a DM or whatever it was, or even on Open Twitter. I can't remember where it was. And I just thought, the absolute cheek of someone to have a go at a novice, it's pathetic. Why are people doing that? It's just stupid. It's like, this person's a novice, treat them with respect. You were a novice once, you know. People have got to learn, you know. People will make mistakes, whatever. Chances are the novice probably did something good, but you know what it's like. I just don't understand people's behavior.
It's completely unnecessary, and the problem we have there, not only is it impacting a newbie, impacts the people that have been around for a long time as well, but the likelihood is that that newbie who's been around for a year or less than a year or whatever time frame is already feeling vulnerable because they made an error which has cost them some money. But then he or she, or in your case your friend is a female, is considering, you know what, maybe Twitter isn't for me, maybe I don't want to be exposing myself to this sort of abuse, because there's enough noise and stuff going on in each of our own lives that, you know, why expose ourselves to that as well, you know?
Yeah, and it's just such a shame. And
it's,
I mean,
uncalled for, Pete. It's unnecessary.
People need to think. It's like, I mean, I remember, right, when I started doing Wheelie Dealer, I was about 4 weeks into it or 6 weeks into it. I was very, you know, no one had ever heard of me before. I just suddenly appeared from nowhere. And I had this conversation with someone on a DM, and it seemed like a normal conversation, yeah? Like about various stocks and whatever. And he was asking me all these questions and whatever. And then shortly afterwards, in Open Twitter, this person puts out a tweet and says, just been talking to, he didn't name me, but it was obviously meant me. It says, I've been just been talking to this bloke. He knows absolutely nothing. He's an idiot. He bought such and such a stock and he's a dickhead or whatever. And I just thought, I cannot believe that. And I unfollowed the guy because he really wound me up. And I just thought, but do you know what? It then made me think, like for a whole weekend, I was thinking, do I want to do this? So Wheelie Dealer nearly didn't happen because of this idiot's behaviour within like a few weeks into me starting. And I just thought, that's just like outrageous. When I look back on it, it's outrageous.
It is outrageous, mate. And what concerns me, it goes back to the conversations I've been having for a long, 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 long time, is that regardless of whether the person's inexperienced, a newbie, or highly experienced, you know, and a fund manager, you know, the need to master our own psychology is of immense importance. The way that we behave towards others is of immense importance. And we take it for granted that we're going to be here tomorrow. You know, we take it for granted we're going to be here next year. But how we're remembered and how we're thought of is actually how we make people feel. They'll remember that far longer than the stuff that we said.
Yeah, exactly.
It's about that
yeah.
feeling that that person gave us. And if I'm not saying be warm and fuzzy to everybody, because Twitter isn't, social media isn't like that. There are certain people that I just completely avoid on Twitter. You know, there's certain people that you just...
And that's the best way to do it. If you have an issue with someone, just don't get in.
I don't have issues with anybody, Pete. But I think the thing is that I don't need a lot of negativity on my timeline. I don't need a lot of negativity in my life. I try and be as helpful and supportive as I can to as many people as I can. But if you're going to shower the Twitter sphere with negativity, I don't need that. I don't want to see that bouncing up on my timeline.
But the thing is, again, we're back to the market gods. If you are nasty to people on Twitter in a stock context sense, sooner or later, the market remembers what you said. It's going to get you. You'll be found out.
Karma has a way of getting.
It does. It really does. Like I said, I'm not religious at all, but I really do believe in the gods of the market.
Well, that goes back to the bubbles situation. So you're talking. Let's go back. Karma, bubbles. What are you seeing that you wanted to share with us, Pete? That you're concerned about?
Well, okay. I'll try and sort of like go through some scenarios and try and explain why my thinking's going this way. And like I said, it may not happen. But to be honest with you, for me personally, right, I'm not bothered whether it happens or not. Because of all the time I've spent in the last 3, 4, 5 years learning how to hedge, right? I'm ready. Whatever the market throws at me, if the markets all crash tomorrow, I'm ready, all right? If the markets do a bubble, I'm ready for a bubble. So I'm sort of like got my bases covered each way. And I think one of the things that, people need to think about who are listening is, you know, have you got your portfolio, your wealth set up in a way that if the markets are going to fall 50% over the next 3 months, are you ready for that? Because I bet you most people listen, this won't be. And that's, you know, that's what I'm sort of thinking. Anyway, the logic of the bubble, right? If I'm going to put a blame on it, right? The blame is quantitative easing, QE, and it's NIRP, N-I-R-P, negative interest rate policy, right? I think all this trickery and tomfoolery and games and pumping money into the system by the central banks is absolutely distorting everything. All financial assets are being massively distorted. And I think that is what is going to, if a bubble happens, it's going to be driven by that. And bubbles always culminate with a big spike up, a big vertical spike up in the market, and your taxi driver's tipping it to you, your cleaner's tipping it to you, whatever. And then it all goes, and then it goes bang, yeah? And that's the sort of the nub of it, if you like.
Well,
I've just like blown you sideways, mate.
I'm sitting here, mate, and I'm just trying to get my head around it because we've spoken before, I think, and I've spoken with Phil before as well, Phil Oakley, about this negative yield problem. And I think at one stage last year, it was at 18 trillion negative yielding bonds. And I was like, whoa. So I'm in complete agreement with you that, you know, is that sustainable? Is you know, at what point does that become sheer madness? You know, you had Greece, of all places and country. Hello, Greece, if you're listening.
Hello, Greece. Have you had your tapas yet?
Thank you for listening to
me. Or is that Spain, isn't it, tapas? Have you had your olives?
But for them to be able to sell negative yielding bonds last year, I was sat there going, what? This is a country that was deemed to be on the brink, able to sell bonds at a negative. I was like, oh, this something's not right here.
So what you're saying is that Greece, that the Greek government, and bear in mind the problems Greece had just a few years ago and the massive debt pile it has, yeah? What you're saying is that the Greek government can borrow money, can take on debt at such a low rate that it's in fact negative in real terms. So basically, where is the risk premium? Because there's this concept of a thing called the risk premium, right? So if you're like in the old days, in you know how things used to be, if you're a solid country that's, you know, got a good solid political base and it's got a good manufacturing and good economy and all the rest of it, yeah, good rule of law, then you could sell bonds at, you know, relatively low interest rate. So you could get debt, issue bonds at say 4 or 5% or whatever. If you're a country that has a history of defaulting on your debt and currency problems and problems with your economy, political problems, civil unrest, blah, 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 then you could only borrow at high interest rates, like 15% or whatever it was. Your bonds would go away at like really high interest rates. Well, and that's the thing.
Not 15%, Pete.
They were. You know, countries like Argentina and that were on 15%.
Regularly.
But I bet you, I mean, I haven't looked, but I bet you even now Argentina can probably get bonds away at 6% or something. And like, it's madness. It's like, it used to be that the interest rate you paid reflected the risk. So the higher the rate, the higher the risk. The lower the rate, the lower the risk. But that's all just gone out the window. Basically, even the most dodgy, terrible, high-risk places in the world can get their bonds away at ridiculously low interest rates, like 1% or 2% or even negative. I mean, it's insane. And I think that is what is going to stoke a massive bubble.
Pete, you've made a great call there. That's highly, highly, highly possible. You know, I think it goes back to October of 2019 that the Greeks were able to get away about, I don't know, 500 million euros at minus 0.02%, which is negative. So
It's insane.
to be able to achieve that was quite a significant moment, given where they were,
Yeah. And think about what it actually means. So get your head around that. What that means is that the Greek government can borrow money off you and you're paying them money to take your debt. It's insane. Take that. That is just nuts. And
It is nuts. But going back to your point, and I've just and I, this is not me having researched it. I've just had to quickly go and do a search for it.
it's like I said, I've just sort of thrown this whole topic
You've
on you.
thrown it at me,
Yeah, but it's like we said, Twin Peaks is
Argentina.
totally unscripted.
Argentina Pete yesterday sold 2.75 billion of 100-year bonds in the US, and that
100 years, so
yielded
you won't even get your money back for 100 years.
Pete 7.9%.
It's insane.
Seven
That's what
point.
I'm
They're still
saying.
struggling, mate. So they're still struggling. So yeah, I get what you're saying about the QE. The QE's been rolling and rolling and rolling for a good while. Doesn't seem to be abating. They keep changing the name of it, but it's still coming in the sense of, juicing up the market and adding the, the crack addicts are still getting their fix. But we're still here, Pete. And at some point or other, as you say, that you've got to pay the piper.
Well, exactly. And let's just dig into that a little bit more. So, for instance, right, last year there appeared to be the start of an economic slowdown. Germany has been coming out with some really rubbish figures. UK's obviously got its own problems. But America, isn't really growing as fast as it should. I mean, with all the Trump policies and whatever, in theory, the US economy should be growing at 4%, 5% a year, and it's probably struggling to do 2%. And then you've got like the Japan. I mean, Japan is another bonkers, insane one. Japan, not only has the central bank been buying Japanese bonds, which obviously again drives down the interest rate, they've been buying shares. Equities, they're buying shares in companies. I mean, the risk of that is just, again, it's just off the scale. It's just madness. And so I think that's all adding to this whole. And so sorry. So the point was that there was a bit of signs of a slowdown. And if you remember, the Fed went from being in an interest rate rising cycle, they reversed it and started lowering interest rates again. And that's where we are again. And even today on the news came out that inflation is lower than expected in the UK. And there's talk now that the UK may reduce rates even more. So we're just in this world where debt is getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. The money's being pumped up with cash. Cash has got to go somewhere. And this is what's fueling the boom.
Pete, you have touched on a really, really good point. The number and the sheer scale of the negative yielding bonds is the one I'm definitely been wary of for a little while, and it keeps going up. And they're deemed, and this is the thing, and you're saying it's a bubble, and I'm saying I've been watching it for ages. They're deemed to be risk-free assets. There's like guaranteed, we're going to get paid, we're going to get paid, and I'm like, how much of it? 18 trillion now? Ooh, and another country's able. It's like you've just got to be careful of these things, because it's the ones that it's one. It's often the case, Pete, with these financial crises or whatever you name it as. It's often the case where you deem there's no risk is where the risk is found.
Exactly. And some more evidence for this, and we touched on this in another podcast quite some time ago. One of the things that doesn't make sense is that every asset is going up at the same time. So bonds are going up, stocks are going up, gold is going up. Now that doesn't make sense. Gold should be going down when stocks are going up. It really should be inverse. But it's this classic problem that it's like, it's all this money sloshing around, and it's got to find a home, and it's buying whatever it can. And if you look at the moment, the only place you can get yield, right? Because if you go and buy bonds today and whatever, the yields are so low, you're lucky if you can get 1%, 2%, whatever. That's amazing. The only place you can go is a stock market. And the stock market, even today, you can buy FTSE 100 stocks that are giving you 5%, 6% dividend yields, and they're pretty reliable yields even, And you're probably going to get some capital upside as well. So when you look at it in the context of capital upside plus a yield of 5%, so you could get a total of like 7-8%. That blows away any other investment, any bonds or anything like that, and gold's not going to pay you anything. So you can understand why people would buy stocks.
Yeah, you're spot on, mate. I think the only thing that didn't do so well last year, and they always say, watch what copper's doing. Copper didn't do so well last year.
Yeah,
I'm
Dr.
not
Cole.
sure that if that was about the ongoing trade spat between China
Or
and the US.
maybe it's because it had done well before
Yeah.
because of the excitement about electric vehicles and stuff. And so it sort of got overvalued in the short term or whatever, and it dropped back. Maybe that's what, who knows what it was. But so what I'm really saying, right, and this is the other thing that gets me, right, is that when I think back over 20 years, which is pretty much my investing experience, if you like, yeah, I have never known valuations as high as they are now. I've never known it. You know, back in the day, yeah, back in 2007, before the credit crunch, 2008, if a stock was on a PE of 25, it was mentally highly valued, you know. But now everything's on a forward PE of 25. You know, stuff's on forward PEs of 60, 70, 80. Stuff in America and the tech thing is on like PEs of 200. And, you know, but I don't, but this is my point. I don't even think the bubble started yet. I don't even think we've started the bubble.
It's concerning, Pete, because I look at, I'm a big fan of Jim O'Neill, the book that I always preach about and how to benefit from stocks in any sort of market, etc., etc. And ordinarily, if you're doing a research of a stock and you're able to find a stock that's growing and returning on revenue and able to digest, and grow, then a high PE isn't a problem. It's the
It could
stocks
grow into the PE,
can grow
can't
into
it?
the PE. It's when you are in a stock which isn't necessarily growing and it's on a high PE. We've seen the momentum stocks. The prime example last year was probably the rolling over of Fevertree, which was a highly valued stock, and a lot of people were in that stock, and it didn't quite.
I hold Fevertree and I want to buy more, but at the moment it's in a downtrend and I'm not going to buy in a downtrend.
Yeah, but the point, yeah, I agree with that philosophy, Pete. But the point I'm trying to make is the fact that there are certain stocks where an IPE is justified.
Yes, like we said with Boohoo, we mentioned on the last podcast.
Absolutely. So Boohoo being one of them. But sorry, I said Jim O'Neill. William O'Neill's
Wait a
book
minute.
is basically saying that an IPE when justified could be the start of something even bigger. Because these stocks go on, and I was talking to somebody on Twitter today about the four stocks that are now valued at nearly 4 trillion. You've got the Googles, you've got you sorry, Alphabet as it's called now. You've got Microsoft, you've got Apple, you've got Facebook, you've got all those stocks now. I think I said Amazon. So you've got those stocks now that are all doing that well. Now they've been an IP forever, Pete. But
Is it?
if you've got a stock in the FTSE 350. That's on a staggeringly high PE or on AIM, on a staggering IP, and it's not performing, it's not actually generating any revenue, then you should be worried.
Oh yeah,
You know what I
yeah,
mean? So that's a
it's been
clear
true.
bubble situation going on, and we've seen some stocks that have gone by the by, over the past 2 years.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think there's lots of individual bubble stocks. There's plenty of those around, particularly on the AIMy junkie end of things. But in terms of the markets themselves, I don't think we're in a bubble. And I'll tell you why I say that, right? It's two big things for me with a bubble. Number one is that when you meet like ordinary people, they know about stocks, right? You know, when I go to a party and I'm the most popular man in the room and people are telling me, they're giving me tips, that's when we're in a bubble. But do you know what? I go to meet with friends now, meet parties, whatever. Nobody knows that there's been a 10, 11, 12-year bull run in stocks. Nobody knows this. Nobody knows it. That's insane.
I think that's in part, Pete, because you and I and a few others have been in the markets for 20 plus years. So the people that you're speaking to have only just cottoned on or just got involved in the market in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years because they've always seen it as being high risk. So when you're talking about 2007 or post 2000s, they're going, what? Care? What? So you're having the same conversation I'm having with DMs with certain people. They haven't experienced the recession peak. They haven't experienced the markets going down 10, 15% in one day.
Exactly.
They've experienced it dropping occasionally 5%, maybe in the last 5 years, every now and then. And you've seen the panic last year when the markets had a little bit of dip. There were people, oh, I'm all cash. I'm all cash. I'm out. Or the election's not sure how it's going to go. I'm all out. And I'm thinking, crikey, you haven't seen anything yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
I mean,
we're
this is what I
going.
was saying earlier, that, markets could drop 50% in the next 3 months. It's possible. You know what I mean?
I sincerely hope not. But the point I'm
I
trying
don't think it
to
will, but it could.
the point I'm trying to make is that everyone has to do what they want to do regarding the market. Those that are supremely cautious, should do what they want to do. You know what I mean? Those that are supremely bullish should do what they want to do. But I think you need to look at the big picture. The good, the bad, the indifferent, and have a look at have a do a SWOT analysis of all of your portfolio if you're worried. You don't have to sell everything, and you don't have to buy everything, So just measure it a little bit.
The other thing on the bubble thing. So the first one is, like I said, I mean, do you know what? I actually tested it today, right? So I was in car phone warehouse. Other places to buy phones are available. And I was talking to the girl who was dealing with me there.
The lady, Pete, the
The
lady.
lady, she knew nothing about the stock market bull run. And I said to her, it's gone up, like, it more than doubled in the last, 10 years or whatever it is, way more than that if you look at the American indexes. And people just don't know it has even happened. But 2 years ago, everybody knew about cryptocurrency. Everybody knew
Yes,
about Bitcoin.
very true,
And so
very true.
that is the sign of the top of a bubble. Now, so basically what I've said, right, is that I think, I mean, we can't know. It's impossible to know, right? We cannot know if the markets are going to go on and move into a bubble. And I'm thinking, if you look at the 1990s, you've got a good sort of roadmap. And what happened there was, it sort of, like, just gradually climbed from most of the 1990s, then it went just bonkers. It just went up vertical. Do you know what I mean? And the thing is, we don't know how long. I mean, it could be that this happens in, say, 2023, 2024, 2025. It could be that sort of time. Or it might be it's not until the end of the decade. But I think, as we hear about more QE, more negative interest rate policy, every time the economies look like going into recession, the central banks cut rates and do more QE. Every time they're stoking the bubble, stoking the bubble, stoking the bubble. And so I'm trying to think about, what the if it's, it may not happen, right? It's just a possibility to think about. But the point is, on the way up in the bubble, you will never make money faster in your life. It's going to be the absolute opportunity of your lifetime. However, on the way down, it's going to be absolutely terrible. And so you've got to get out either before the top, before it peaks, or just after it peaks. But if you're still holding it when it goes down, you're just going to lose everything you gained.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. I can't even, my brain's gone blank now. There is a famous quote about more money has been lost calling the top than has ever been regarding
Absolutely.
staying in the market. I can't even, I've gone a blank on the actual quote now. But yeah, Pete, there are risks. There are risks. And I think the caveat I would give for anybody out there that's been spooked by you, Pete.
Well,
Is
it's a funny one because
the fact that you should always be prepared for them, as Buffett says, that the market's going to be shut for 10 years, because the markets are there to take advantage and make a fool of every single one of us. Whether you've been in the market for 10 years, 20 years, 40 years, the markets will bring your head back to you on a silver platter, because that's the nature of the beast. Nothing goes up in a straight line, folks. There was somebody showing me drawdowns of AstraZeneca earlier on today on Twitter. I've seen those drawdowns up since 1994.
You've felt them, mate.
I've seen the price halve. And you've got to be prepared whether or not you're happy to hold any stock and it be halved. If you're only holding 10 stocks and all of them halve in the next 3 months or next 3 years, are you ready for that impact? What safeguards have you got? What's your plan B? What's your plan C to generate enough money for your retirement that you plan for saving for? You've got to be careful that the markets don't allow you to get carried away or get too bullish or too negative on the market. So, there's people that missed out on a lot of the significant rises last year because they did take caution to the wind and pulled their money out of the market and only
Well,
came back in on the 13th of December.
that's effectively what I did
Yeah,
because I was
and
so
this is
cautious and so nervous about
the
what
bit I
was
was
going.
going to touch on, Pete. Because you did use your hedge, and it didn't work, so you were impacted by 12%. There were people that lost more than 12% because they weren't in the market at all.
Oh yeah,
You
exactly.
know what I mean? So there is this thing where I think you've got to take a measured risk. You've got to be cautious. You haven't got to be all uber bullish. You haven't got to be uber negative. You've got to measure this and also look at every single stock in isolation and think to yourself, if that happened and that happened, what would happen to my stock?
Do I want to be holding that stock?
Don't just be looking at the bullish scenario regarding your stock. We have to touch on, Pete, on Games Workshop, which has had a phenomenal rise in the past 3 or 4 years, and some people have held that for quite a long time and have made a stupid amount of money.
I mean, I make cock a hoop on Twitter at Ranmore Ruffian. He's brilliant on it. He's had it for years, and he's just been in there, and he's done so well on it. Fair play to him.
Well, congratulations to you, Ranmore Muffian, if that's the right way I'm pronouncing it.
Not Muffian, Ruffian.
Ruffian.
Ranmore Muffin. No,
Oh dear.
he's gonna love that. Ranmore Crumpet.
Oh dear. Sorry about that. But yeah, it's got up phenomenally well, and it had been going up and had been going up, and it's gone. Let me just go back to the start of last year, right? It was £30 a share, Pete. And it came out with great numbers yesterday. So congratulations to everybody that was holding it between
Fantastic.
January of last year and this year. You got 100% in that share. Today it touched £71, and then somebody's pulled the plug temporarily, may I add.
What was it the other day? What did you say? It was 30 quid.
Yesterday, today, sorry, it touched £71.25,
And a year ago, it was what?
and a year ago it was 30 quid.
Just, I mean, it's incredible rises. It's fantastic.
So it was just about. I think it touched 28 at one point last March. There was a little
Wow.
bit of people going, "Oh, not sure about it. Can this carry on?" Blah blah blah. But they changed the royalty stream and all the rest of it. I don't really know much about it, so I'm not going to say much about it. But today it closed at 67.55, so it dropped just about 4 quid from its intraday high. So somebody was taking money off the table, and you know what? That's sometimes not a bad thing, to take some money off the table. But
It's a healthy pullback. That's
it's
exactly
a
what
healthy
it
pullback.
is.
Some people have made some money. Some people have only come into the stock recently and have done extremely well on it. Some people have been in it for a long time and made hay. But this was a stock, and this is what I say about sometimes you've got to be cautious. This is a stock that didn't go anywhere between 2020, so it was sub around £4, ebbed and flowed between £5 and £8 until 2014, and then came back down to £5. In 2016, it was still £5, in mid 2016. So that since mid 2016, that share has gone from £5 to £71
Off.
intraday high today. So some people that have held that stock for 3.5 years, going on nearly 4 years, have made a
Staggering amount, and
staggering amounts.
it's what we say, you can muck around with your junky AIM stocks all day long, and you can make, you might get lucky and make 80% on one in an afternoon or whatever. But it's only going to be on a small amount of money because you can't buy big amounts and you can't sell big amounts. And yet, you could just tuck away something like Games Workshop and just sit there and do nothing, and up it goes.
It all comes back down to the conversations. We've had numerous conversations on here, and I'm sure, and I hope
By quality.
you ladies and gents that have subscribed to this channel have listened to the majority of the podcast. Compounding, as Einstein has said, is the eighth wonder of the world.
Exactly.
The vast majority of Warren Buffett's wealth has been made in the last 2 decades, and it's crept up and crept up, and he's compounded his investments since 1962, when he first got involved with Berkshire Hathaway, and the last 20 years, his wealth has gone beyond. Oh, it's just staggering. But that's because of compounding. Trading, 5, 10, 15 trades a day is not compounding. It's giving yourself a heart attack. It's increasing your blood pressure.
Just making life
If you
hard for
invest in
yourself.
stock, do some research, get a couple of stocks, and leave them alone.
Yeah, park them up, leave them alone.
Get on with your life. You know what I mean?
I'm sure it's the way to go. I mean, interesting on Games Workshop. It brings us, but I cannot do a podcast without mentioning it. I'm sorry. I'm going to apologize now to all listeners. I'm really sorry. I know I've been on about this one forever. I've got to mention MPAC.
Oh no!
I've got to mention it.
We
I've got to mention
just
it.
lost some listeners now, Pete.
They've all gone, mate. They've all headed for the
Oh
exits.
gosh.
I'm going to do a really tenuous link here to Games Workshop. And
Oh no!
you're
Oh,
going to like it.
you're gonna
So,
curse. That's what they're gonna put it. They're gonna say now this is the reason why it fell. Just
no,
to
so.
say, guys and girls listening, the markets were closed on the 15th when we were doing this, having this podcast. It's now
Is that a
3 minutes to 8.
25th
We're doing
of
this podcast
February?
on the 15th, okay? This is not Pete's fault.
So basically, with Games Workshop, yeah, it was like a moderately successful business for many years, whatever. Then it got into trouble. I can't remember why, but whatever. But I remember, so when it was down at like 5 quid a share, yeah, it was in trouble. It was going for this thing where they used to have their shops in the high street or whatever, and they only had one member of staff in the shop. And he or she would open the door, go in, do all the stuff, go out, close it. And there's just one member. I mean, you think about that. That's quite mad, isn't it? It's like Tesco's having one member of staff. So anyway, they were going through this really tough time. But at some point, I don't really follow that stock because it never really got me, unfortunately. I wish I had followed it. But the point is, something changed, after that period, and it became a turnaround stock. It became a recovery stock, yeah. And it's a great example. Like with me, I didn't know what, even now I wouldn't be able to tell you what made the difference. I've got no idea because it's just not something I follow. I'm not particularly interested in that stock. But my point is that fundamentally, so if you're reading the updates from the company, you read their results, you read their trading updates, you read their AGM updates, you meet with them at shows, whatever. There would have been loads of indications, signals, whatever, that something was improving just within the business. I'm not talking about charts, I'm talking within the business. Yeah, you could see that something was changing for the good, right? And usually the first thing is a change of management. That's always a given, that's always needed. But the other thing is, you look at the chart, you'll have seen the chart change from a major downtrend where it just kept falling for probably several years. Yeah. It then would have bottomed out and gone flat for a bit, and then it would have started an uptrend. And that is the time to be buying the share, when it's starting the uptrend on the chart and when there are fundamental improvements happening in the business. And that's exactly what's happening with MPAC now. Boom.
Tenuous as it is, Pete, I can see the logic there, and I would support that with regards to exactly what happened with future shares when the CEO
Yeah,
went in there, and
good example.
it'd been flatlining for years, and then I saw the base was in, and I was in, and that's done 16 bag since then. Sometimes you have to be watching these things and having to look at what is the catalyst going to be for this share. Forget about the noise and who's talking about it on the market. Forget about what Pete says. Forget what I'm saying. Forget about what anybody says. Go away and do some research and find the catalyst for the shares that you don't currently have. And when you see that catalyst, don't wait for someone else to say it's a good idea. You've done your research, get on board, invest your money, go with conviction and be patient. Because if you get the right stock and it's on that transition and it's on that catalyst, you can make hay, and eventually, sometime in the future, whether it be 3 months, 6 months, or 2 years, a bit like what's happened with Games Workshop, people are now paying £70 for a share they could have picked up 3.5 years ago at 50 at 5 quid.
Yeah,
I'm
I
not
mean,
going to do that. I don't chase stocks. Yeah, I didn't want to chase it at 20 quid, mistake. I didn't want to chase it at 40 quid, mistake. Today it hit 70 quid. Congratulations to all those that had it. I've got my stocks that people are now chasing. I'm not going to go and chase theirs. It's just the way it is. We can't all be in every single winning stock.
Oh, dead right. I
You
mean,
know?
on that subject of ones that are doing this, that are in this sort of long major chart downtrend, because the other one I did it on was pets, yeah? But that one had ridden the downtrend, it had bottomed out, and then it's gone into an uptrend. Now, there's two other stocks that are doing it. One is Secure Trust Bank, STB. I don't hold it. It was tipped in Investors Chronicle last week, funnily enough. But that one has been in a downtrend, and I think it's going to start breaking out of that downtrend soon. So that's one to watch.
Let me just pop in there, Pete. What would be the catalyst? We're talking about catalyst now. We're 45 minutes in, so we need to cut this in the next 5 minutes,
Well,
Pete.
I
What
would
would be the catalyst
expect,
for that to step up?
yeah, I would expect, I mean, going by the chart, it's still in that downtrend. I think it might be just starting to come out of the downtrend. So something is starting to change. I would guess, not knowing the company that well, I would guess that the change will be a pickup in the UK economy with the Boris bounce and with all the political woes being resolved, with improvements in mortgage lending, improvements in car lending, improvement in consumer confidence in general. That's probably what will drive it out if you have to think of a fundamental reason.
Okie doke. Cool.
But
No.
I may be wrong, but the point is the chart is telling us that something's happening.
Okay.
And then another one that's doing it, and this one is really high risk. So I'm not saying that anyone should buy this and that, anything we say, we're not like tipping shares or anything. We're just talking about stocks. But one that's doing a very similar thing is AA. You look at a chart of AA, it's been in a long, 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 long-term downtrend, but it's starting to look like it's going to escape that downtrend. At
But
some
for
point,
me, Pete,
that'll buy.
the concerns has been, and it continues to be, the level of debt that the
It's the
private
debt
equity
is
companies put on that company before they listed it again. It's staggering, mate.
the debt is absolutely mega. So, but what you've got to watch is watch that chart. When it gets out of the downtrend, follow what's happening within the business and see what's changing. And obviously what we want is that debt to start flipping, reducing. But if they start coming out with good results and that debt starts to reduce, that is going to re-rate.
Okay, well, I'll certainly have a look at it again. All right, Pete, we're in 40 odd minutes, mate.
Yeah, I
47
better knock it on
exercise.
the bonds, mate.
What do you want to conclude with, mate? I want to wrap this up before we hit 50 minutes.
Mate, I think we've sort of covered a load of topics there. I think it's all good. I think people just need to, just be careful out there and good luck, really,
Okie dokie. Once again, folks, thank you ever so much for listening to Twin Peaks. We're going to keep innovating. I tried tonight to sort out the audio, believe you me. And if you're still hearing Pete through one ear and me through another ear, please just have a play around with your apps and so on and so forth. See if you can sort that out. But we are going to rectify it. So thank you for your patience and we will get it sorted. So if you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe. If you haven't forwarded this to any of your friends, please forward it to your friends. If you haven't said hello to us via Twitter or any other social media, please say hello. Thank you all for your feedbacks. I'll be putting some of those in the write-ups regarding what you've said about the podcast and enjoying it. We've got some new followers, new people listening. So thank you ever so much for showing us the kindness and support you've given us so far. And this is the second part two of the first of the 2020 podcast. We're planning to do loads more in 2020, and we're also going
Absolutely.
to be at some shows. So we're looking forward to see you guys and ladies at some events going forward as well.
Excellent.
All right, so take care, God bless, and we'll see you soon. And going back to what we touched on before as well, please show kindness to other people. Yeah,
Absolutely.
don't have to show any negativity to anybody. Yeah, there's enough stuff going on. I need to use the rude word then. There's enough going on in people's
No.
lives. I don't need additional negativity on social media. So
Remember
show some kindness. Be mindful of what
the
you say.
saying, it's better to have a mistake and be humble as a result than to have some good accomplishments and be arrogant.
Amen.
All right, man. See you later.
Take care. God bless everybody. See you soon. Bye-bye.